Hi everyone, this is Matt Price, one of the hosts for the longest-running Dynasty-focused podcast on the planet, the DLF Dynasty Podcast. Each week, we'll bring you an episode packed with relevant and actionable Dynasty information that you can use to help win your league. When I'm in the host chair, we might even play a game or two. We are always open to topic suggestions, so if there's something you'd like to hear us discuss, please let us know. Thanks for listening.
Check my inbox and what do I see? Just another day, another T-R-A-D-E. I'm an addict and I need it in my veins. I'm an addict, otherwise I feel plain now. Every day I wake up, people got a problem. Making all these trades up, got me singing got them. But I've been paid up, I even started from the bottom. See, I don't wait up, I ain't even playing possum. So what it cost, I'm just a couple of firsts. Can't believe that it worked, not to say I'm a jerk. But I'm an addict, it's what I said in the first. You can curse all you want, you can pray in your church. But I'ma keep tapping return, I win up, I learn. I ain't trying to burn any bridges, I yearn. For the feeling I earn, I'ma win, it's a turn. You had a cheek before I drop you like the beat. I'm an addict, and I'm not really ashamed. I'm an addict, I'm reclining with the brain. I'm an addict, and the pot is what I'm playing. I'm an addict, Russ and Brian are the names. Trade Addicts Pod, let's go.
I am Dynasty Outhouse, and I have a trading problem.
And I am Rocky Petrella, and I also have a trading problem.
I'm Sigmund Bloom, and I have a podcasting problem.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to session 145 of the Trade Addicts Podcast, a member of the DLF family of podcasts, also a proud member of the Dynasty Addicts Podcast Network, the DAP Network, if you will, and we will. And it is actually wonderful for someone to go off script with the trading problem and turn it into a podcasting problem, because those are two problems I absolutely can appreciate and, empathize with. Because if I have two problems in this world, well, we'll say in the fantasy community, outside there's plenty more problems, but, you know, podcasting and trading, those are my two issues. Usually we do some sort of back and forth spiel, but hey, let's face it. I'm always terrified of talking to people, asking them to come on the show. Rocky is like, I'm not afraid of people. So he asks Sigmund Bloom to come on the show. Sigmund Bloom says yes. So we're not going to BS anything. We're going to go right into having fun, right into this show. Because let's face it, it's Pro Bowl week and nobody wants to talk about that anyway.
Yes, we want to hear much more, Sigmund. Not me and you.
Right, yeah. But first, we do a little interviewee thing with anyone that first comes on, because I make the joke, why should people trust you? At this point, I think people should know why to trust Sigmund Bloom. But first, why don't you anyway tell people who you are, what you do, and where they could find what you do?
Yeah, I've been at Football Guys for 15 years now, and I'll turn that question on its head and say, I don't think necessarily you should trust me. Or if you hear me say something and you disagree with me, that's good. Let's provoke thought. I'm not here to tell you I've come down from the mountain with some sort of special knowledge that only I have. I'm watching the same things y'all are watching, and I form opinions. I really just like to talk about it. I like that we can share the experience and share how this amazing, complex game, it slants through our head and provokes thoughts. And then with fantasy football, that's just the place we can all sit down together and connect about it. Sigmund Bloom on Twitter, footballguys.com, which is like, it's picking out addicts, fantasy football problems. I usually say, if you are obsessed with football, if it's the first thing you think about when you wake up and the last thing you think about before you fall asleep, that's Football Guys, you know?
Oh yeah.
So that, isn't that what we're all here to do? See, I'm going to turn this into an on the couch episode. Aren't we all here just to help each other feel okay about the problems that we have, joining each other and saying it might not be that bad if you're here too?
Yeah, exactly. That's why we start the show that way every single time. It was really a little self-serving in the beginning, because I was always the person that traded the most trade, and then I joined this community, and then I found so many other people that were just right there with me that it just became, let's get it out in the open. Let's start talking about it.
And it releases endorphins. I want to just interject and say, absolutely. Okay. When you see the email come across that your trade was accepted, or you accept a trade, you see a trade, and it, you know, I love the way that the software usually ceremonial tells you, are you sure you're about to accept this trade? Are you really sure? It's momentous. And absolutely, it releases endorphins. Totally can take me out of a bad day if I see an offer I put out like 2 days ago got accepted. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah, especially if you're an idiot like me in 30-something leagues and just start clicking buttons to offer trades and you forget you sent them out. Okay, so Sigmund Bloom, how long have you been playing fantasy football?
About 20 years. When I first got an office job, my first job out of law school. And, well, you're in front of the computer all day. And it was an excellent way for the eight of us. We had an eight-person league to bond and just have something to obsess about, trash talk about, and generally annoy the other people in our office about. That was also fun, like being in the in-group. And, it, you know, it's come a long way. It's wild that fantasy football has become an industry and there's been so much thought about it. But I think it's really just that football burns so brightly. It's so intense and it means so much to people that people love to share in the excitement and enthusiasm. And fantasy football has just given people an excuse or a rationalization for caring about everything that happens on a football field, even though it doesn't really matter.
Oh, yeah. Are you one of those people that still has your first league going to this day? Or did that fall apart at some point?
No, it fell apart. Like, I think it fell apart whenever the work group broke up. Like, we weren't all working at the same place. We were working at the University of Texas at the time. I am in a dynasty league that's been going for 16 years, I think. I've also gotten into leagues that were going longer than I was in them, like 20-plus years. And, of course, if we really want to get into it, we can get into the people like Bob Harris or Paul Charchi. And I know that my buddies Bob Henry and the Red Eye Sports guys, they've had leagues that have been going – you know, back into the 90s. And, it's fun. And I think it's an excellent thing to demonstrate to everybody out there, fantasy football or otherwise. If you care about something and you're one of the first people to do it, just because you really care about it, that can, in and of itself, you know, I'm speaking about myself here, right? Like, I'm a more of like second wave of fantasy football, but I feel like there's so many more talented people or knowledgeable or clever or ingenious people than me. But because I took a risk and started when it wasn't clear that this was going to become an industry, I have a place at the table and I'm thankful for that.
Yeah. See, that's my goal. And I think that's like the goal we should push along to everyone else. Like, just keep going and keep talking. Sooner or later, people will think you're talking for a good reason. Okay. So you've been playing fantasy football for a crazy long time. How long have you been playing Dynasty?
You know, I jumped right into Dynasty. I was playing – I my first league was that eight-person redraft league, but immediately I wanted more. And, you know, I don't want to take up the time I'm going to be here just talking about old war stories and things like that. But the first league that I joined actually was part of a league that had 20 teams. It was kept on text documents in Yahoo groups, RIP Yahoo groups, and it was a four-sport Dynasty league. So you fielded a team in every one of the major sports and competed against each other, and you could sign people, players to contracts. You know, you had a salary cap, and it was incredible. Like, I could sign in the baseball league, I could sign players in rookie ball. Like, I remember signing Hanley Ramirez when he was in rookie ball for the Red Sox. And, you know, that it became about a race, whether it's football, baseball, basketball, or hockey, to get to those young players first. I mean, of course, there would be the rookie draft, but there were always the players that slipped through the cracks. And that was it really, you know, in addition to introducing me to IDP fantasy football, I was hooked. And it was just like a kitten in a ball of yarn, you know, something that my brain could play with all the time, year round. And so I jumped into the deep end right away.
I was just going to say that's really diving in head first to start out that way. I can't even imagine that.
Okay, well, since we don't have you for as long of a time as we normally have, we're going to jump straight into listener questions because I feel like that's the right thing to do for our listeners, right?
Right.
First question is from @PanthersDynasty. How do you feel about Juju in Dynasty, buying, selling, or avoiding, Sig?
Probably buying. He's not going to be back with the Steelers. I mean, that's just not going to happen. But I don't know if that's a bad thing. I know a lot of his value this year was based on the limitations of the Steelers' offense. But what is he, like 24? I mean, he wasn't running real routes. He wasn't used in the way that he was when Antonio Brown was there and able to make big plays, and Roethlisberger's arm wasn't really supporting that anyway. So, of course, anytime a player goes into free agency and it becomes about a bidding war, you always have the danger they end up with, you know, the Jets or just some place that has a lot of money but is a kind of a dysfunctional organization. So there's risk there. But I also think that the taste of watching him be so pedestrian at this early juncture of his career kind of stuck with people. Look, if you were trying to trade for Juju Smith-Schuster at the beginning of 2019, right, he was about as untouchable as anyone on the side of Michael Thomas. Now he's very touchable. So I would at least be open to it.
All right, so let me ask, well, two questions. First, we'll stick to dynasty value because, I mean, that's what we do.
Yeah.
Coming into this rookie draft, there's a ton of awesome wide receivers coming in. Where would you sort of rank him among them? Would you rather have Juju or Chase Rondale Moore?
Oh, man. Probably right around, I mean, if we're assuming that Chase and Smith are one and two at this point, then probably right around the value of Moore or Waddle. You know, I don't know exactly what the conventional wisdom is yet. And what's going to be really fun about rookie drafts this year is there isn't really going to be a conventional wisdom. I mean, there'll be the obvious top players, you know, Travis Etienne and Harris and things like that. But after that, I think we're going to have a lot more variance. So I'd say, you know, around 1.4, 1.5, I think, is about where I would fix his value.
Yeah, and I think that's like, there's been such an argument on Twitter today that I don't know if we're going to have time to get to, or I've been telling everyone else to start talking about that, the difference between players we've seen do it and these nice toys. Like, we've seen Juju be awesome. And like, what happens if he goes to like, well, let's just say Aaron Rodgers stays in Green Bay and he goes to Green Bay across from Devontae Adams. Mm-hmm. Better than every wide receiver coming in at that point to me. Like, that's such a, and the people are like, I'm not going to give up a first round for him because of everything that, you know, Jalen Waddle can be. So, but he's the same age as Juju, pretty much, and we've seen it. But, you know, bringing up Green Bay and all that, is there a spot you would love to see Juju land in?
That's a good question. I mean, Jacksonville would be interesting, depending on how much they push to you know, keep the defense on their toes, spread offense, Urban Meyer. I don't know if DJ Chark is going to be around there after next year. Laviska Shenault is good, but he's not the same kind of receiver as Juju. I mean, I just think instantly you'd have him as like a 100-catch receiver. Like, you would absolutely project him there. You know, there's a, I'm glad that you bring up the idea of people saying, I don't want him because of where he's at. I think another reason that you might be able to get him cheaper than you think in terms of rookie picks is how well all the rookies did this year, or overall. A lot of people were really happy with their rookie picks, but you have somebody like Jerry Jeudy, who's a bit of a cautionary tale. And Jerry Jeudy may still, like, check in 2, 3, 4 years from now, Jerry Jeudy might be a top 10 fantasy wide receiver. But nobody really paused when he landed in Denver, and it was a disaster. So I think that, again, when you emphasize that known quantity, of course, with Juju, his team isn't a known quantity, but I think, because another thing is, so my brain, when you ask me this question, Russ, my brain pauses and says, well, okay, there are places that would be ideal, but where could he actually land? And I don't want to say some place that's, you know, just a pie in the sky that's never going to happen. So I think about teams that have a lot of money. You know, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me to see him in Miami, for instance. I don't know if that would be a good thing or a bad thing. And that's the other thing, right? We have so many quarterback dominoes to fall. What did Adam Schefter say? Oh, 18 quarterbacks, 18 teams will have a new quarter. I don't know. That's a little bit outlandish. But I think that there's so, you know, the Jets, if Deshaun Watson goes there, all of a sudden become the ideal destination, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So all of this is very mercurial, right? I think of the Chargers offense this year. Going into the season, Keenan Allen was, you know, his name was Mud, like 5th, 6th round pick. And then a wayward injection. And the next thing you know, we have Keenan Allen posting some of the better numbers of his career, at least in terms of PPR numbers. So things change really fast. That's why you, like you said, you want to go with that known quantity. We know what Juju can do. It's just a question of the situation that can maximize him.
And to your point, too, even a guy like Diggs, he was way down there just because of where he was going. And no one saw the Josh Allen jump coming. And so... what may seem like a bad situation, even now in January, may not be one in March, April, May. Yeah.
Sorry. We have our patrons that watch along with us recording and they get to comment, you know, what's going on. Sam says, this is probably stereotyping, but I always assume Sigmund Bloom looked like Sigmund Freud.
I'm happy. You know, when I was a little kid, I did not like having the name Sigmund. I told my mom, I just want to have a normal name. And my middle name is McClay. She said, they can ask people to call you Mac. I'm like, no. Okay, I'll be Sigmund. And since this podcasting and democratic media all came along, I'm happy because it makes people, I think people think I'm smarter than I really am, which I'll take that.
So your name is Sigmund. You got the glasses going on. You're wearing a shirt with that Edgar Allan Poe on it. Like, I mean,
you're actually Poe boy.
We're ignoring that part of it.
Yeah. Highbrow. We always want to keep it highbrow and lowbrow. You know?
Yeah.
Let's go on to our next question, though. Jake Anderson at NFL Draft Talker wants to know, how about, because that's what we should talk about, how about Sig's offseason rookie evaluation process in detail? When / where he starts, how he obtains lists, what's most important to his process? So let's take this in pieces. Like, when do you start with, are you a Debbie guy? Like, do you know everyone by heart by now, or do you, you're shaking your head no. So when do you start looking into these guys?
I'd love to. I mean, a little bit. I have one league with a one round Debbie draft every August. So if I familiarize myself with these players, but this is about the time that we change modes. Like, I'm starting to watch the quarterbacks now, and I start with the quarterbacks because that also drives the draft, which is fun, you know, just thinking about what these teams are going to do, especially this year. I mean, we would see a quarterback and play at one, obviously 1, 2, 4, 7, 8, and, you know, we could go on and on, not even including trades. And they're all very different. So not so much even for fantasy, but just for the idea of understanding the significance of all of the moves that may or may not happen in the first round. And then, you know, moving on, and what I want to do is I just want to be familiar enough with each player. Even just watch like at least one cut up for, say, each of the top 10 or 15 quarterbacks, 30, 40 wide receivers, maybe 20, 30 running backs, 10, 15 tight ends. So that the name evokes an image. The name evokes a playing style. You know, I want to kind of get a player. And also, your fantasy football team should reflect you in some ways. You're not just... And I get it. There are a lot of people doing great, great work. And I suppose it can be your style in life that I just have really good consultants. And I trust them. And I am successful in life because I know who to trust. And that's fine. And I know, as I say this, there are people out there who probably trust what I say. But I like the idea of having my guys, you know. Mm-hmm. And I like to watch the players before the rankings have really gotten set. Like someone like my colleague Matt Waldman, who, you know,
we've heard of him.
Tremendous respect for him. Yeah, he's fantastic. And he doesn't care or look at what anybody else says. You know, if he does his process, and at the end of that process, you know, there are times that people say, explain yourself. And then a year later, he doesn't have to explain himself. You know, explain yourself when you say that Russell Wilson can be one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL, even though he was a third round. He didn't even know he was going to be a third round pick. He just watches him and says, this is how I evaluate this player. And I think that keeps it pure in terms of how your teams are composed and how they reflect your philosophy of football, what you think matters. But at the same time, over the years, if you would have asked me this, because one of the first things I did, and I was lucky, I came along at a time that if you ask a question, what is there in fantasy football that nobody is doing? And at that time, there wasn't really a lot of rookie scouting for fantasy football leagues in 2005, 2006. I started the Bloom 100 for those crazy deep 16-team full IDP lineup just to take a stab at how do you even begin to rank these players against each other. You know, it's one of the best questions if you do these full 11 starters on IDP. Make sure your scoring in IDP makes it so, you know, Myles Garrett and Aaron Donald are worth as much as Christian McCaffrey or Devontae Adams. Mm-hmm. Now it's really fun. So how do you even go about starting a ranking of the top 100 and something like that? Where, like, by number 100, you're getting to players that maybe weren't even drafted. And I think that what I enjoy the most about it was just coming into these players and having a stance. And I would have said talent's more important than landing spot. Talent, it's all about talent. Talent creates opportunity. Talent creates destiny. But now, guys, I mean, we know the names of play callers. Like, 15 years ago, even the smartest football watchers, if you say who calls the plays for teams or things like that, or what coaching tree is the offensive coordinator from, I mean, the amount of knowledge out there and the context for players is so important. So now I think it is important when we see the landing spots to kind of clear your head, starting with that idea of the player that you have, but then think about, well, how does this player fit in here? And will his value be magnified? You know, if he's the kind of player, and Matt Waldman, again, does a tremendous job with this, where, you know, sometimes there are rookies that need patience, and there are some organizations that aren't patient. Then sometimes maybe the best thing you can do if you're doing rookie scouting reports is tell me what he can do and tell me what he can't do. It doesn't mean he's going to be a success or a failure. It just means that if a team asks him to do these things, you're going to be real happy with him. If a team asks him to do these things, you're going to be really disappointed. And we've seen over the course of a player's career, over the course of a year, over the course of a game even, both of those things play out. So I just like to be able to have that idea. And then when I see where the players land, you can immediately say, like, oh, that's a great landing spot for him because of the type of quarterback or the type of offense or the opportunity that he has. Or you can say, I was really interested in him, but now I'm not. And again, back to Rocky's point, you know, A.J. Brown was a player that I think everybody loved when they watched him.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was going to catch passes from Marcus Mariota, who was throttling the value out of everybody around him. And, well, things didn't turn out that way.
Yeah, I think that's such a great point you made about looking at these guys before you start hearing from, because there's so much groupthink that goes on as we get further into the process, even pre-draft, and especially, like you said, getting to your second point, post-draft landing spots. And then, I mean, that's how we end up with CEH being the 101 when there's he probably shouldn't have been all along.
Right.
So I think that's a great point.
Do you watch college football at all, or is it just when you scout?
Yeah, I just don't have time now. I mean, I'll watch it after the season. I'd love the cut-ups. Hats off to everybody who's doing that work. I think as a community, we should definitely be mindful and support them for the time and effort, energy they put into it, because it's fantastic. And I look forward to a future, guys. We're not that far away. And I think the league has tools like this. I think they've had it for a while, where you could go into a player's database of plays and say, you know, show me all the plays where this player lined up out wide and ran a deep post, you know, or something like that. Or show me the plays where he was blocking. And it's fun because we have access to so much more knowledge and data about a player than the people that came before us. And what I love is that every year there's more and more people pushing that envelope with data visualization, their new metrics. And just, it's like a big laboratory. I've always compared our little sandbox to an academic department at a university, you know, because we all have our own schools of thought. We all have our way of approaching it. We'll tear down each other's work. We'll learn from each other's work. We'll build on each other's work. And we come together through our passion and enthusiasm for the subject. And it's like those math problems that will never be solved. You know, there's these math problems that people will spend their whole lifetime on, knowing that they're probably never going to solve the problem, but maybe they advance the ball down the field a little bit farther. And that's what's beautiful about this football thing. We try to guess because it's unknowable. And because of that, it keeps us coming back for more, And we always have things to talk about.
And maybe one day we'll know when the right time to sell running backs is.
Yeah.
All right. Our next question is a two-parter. We have at Chris Allen FFWX. Love that guy. His first question is, how are you approaching the free agent market this season? Even just the QBs that are likely on the move, making trades now or waiting for clarity?
Can I say both? I mean, I do think because of it, you're going to see more reluctance in some ways. But then again, I mean, I'm on the Trade Addicts podcast, right? So how can I say that people are going to be reluctant? If anything, it just adds another layer of fortune or chance, but it also adds another layer of your prognostication abilities.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there's a lot of things here, right? There's evaluating the free agents. There's anticipating how the front offices are going to act, right? So let's take Washington, for instance. Washington's a good one, right? Because if Washington is unsuccessful at upgrading their quarterback position, well, I mean, we might still like J.D. McKissick, I guess, as a bench filler guy. Logan Thomas is an ascendant player. But, you know, Terry McLaurin is not going to be unlocked. And for that matter, even Logan Thomas isn't going to be truly unlocked. Antonio Gibson's not going to be unlocked. But if we think Martin Mayhew, the new GM who drafted Matthew Stafford, goes strong to the hole, and that's what we have, right? We have like these two and a half dominoes, or two and a eighth, because you've got Watson and Stafford, and those are big dominoes. Because Stafford could be as impactful from a team fate standpoint as Tom Brady, but unlike Tom Brady, who was coming into a high volume pass offense that already was maximizing the fantasy value of players, Stafford could really elevate the players around him. Imagine if Stafford goes to Denver, right? John Elway, who's in a ceremonial position now, he's not the GM, he loves to land the big fish. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I think Watson has made it pretty clear that he wants to go to Miami or the Jets. I think that in this kind of situation, and I say two and eight, by the way, because there's still this Aaron Rodgers thing lingering out there. So we'll continue to read him. So, you know, in some ways, you're almost playing fantasy GM, where's Stafford going to land? If you think it's Indianapolis, then maybe you get out ahead and get a Paris Campbell. You know, if you think it's Washington, maybe you're looking at Logan Thomas before. So there's going to be value fluctuations, absolutely, based on these quarterbacks as the first domino. And then the running back market, Aaron Jones, he's not coming back to Green Bay. Is Jamal Williams coming back to Green Bay? I mean, no one's going to give up A.J. Dillon now. That being said, it never hurts to try. If they still might be underestimating what A.J. Dillon's worth. If I can say anything, see, this is fantastic. And guys, feel free to interrupt me if I ramble on too much.
Are you kidding? I'm taking notes.
In my experience of doing Dynasty Fantasy Football for 15 years, when you have clarity, you will often be this close to making a deal that feels like overpaying for a player. And you don't, because you feel like that's just too much given the conventional wisdom value of that player, even though it's a player that you're really pursuing. And by the end of that year, you're wishing you'd made the trade. Mm-hmm. You're looking back and you're saying, that was nothing. That was, I could have got him for a quarter of his value now, even though it felt like overpaying at the time. And A.J. Dillon may be one of those guys. I mean, A.J. Dillon may turn into Derrick Henry next year. And if you trade, like, you know, 1-7 and some pieces for him, even though he was a second round pick, sometimes even falling maybe farther, depending on how the rookie drafts went, you still may feel like you got a great deal. So I think this is a great time to do the classic put your money where your mouth is. And I think that you can wait, but if you have a good sense of players and just a good sense of those other, how those shoes are going to drop or not drop, right? You know, Allen Robinson, I mean, he could end up back in Green Bay. They were interested in him. He could end up back in Chicago. He could not get as much interest as he thinks. It's really difficult to say, but then we circle back to the Keenan Allen and Stephon Diggs especially. So that's another thing we have to keep in mind. This year with Stephon Diggs especially just kind of blew up the idea of wide receivers changing teams are going to take a little while to get their RPMs back up. So there's all kinds of stands you can take, and isn't why we do this.
Going back to the QBs, I'm curious as an Eagles fan what your take is on that whole situation, and which, if either of those guys you would target in Dynasty of the two guys there.
Do you think that the Dynasty hive mind has absorbed that the Eagles are forcing Carson Wentz on Nick Sirianni? You know, that Carson Wentz isn't necessarily getting an opportunity on merit, but he's getting an opportunity because the GM and kind of by proxy the owner are saying, this is how it's going to be. Because if that's the case, then I think that Jalen Hurts would be a good buy low. But the Dynasty community can be really savvy. Because just my take from the outside looking in, Rocky, is this is toxic, right? I mean, how's it really going to work? Like, how's it going to work that you bring in a staff? I even saw something that said Nick Sirianni is going to make the final decision on Wentz, but the Eagles believe Wentz can be rebuilt. Again, that's how he rose.
Yeah.
And how does that, like, really? I mean, really, if Nick Sirianni says, nah, I don't think Wentz is the future, I think we're better off building around Hurts, that's no. I mean, that's not actually on the table.
So and just, the narrative here is that Nick Sirianni is basically hired because Howie and Jeffrey Lurie can tell him what to do, basically.
Yeah. So, you know, I would say if people understand that Wentz is being forced in and that Hurts has a kind of artificial cap on his opportunity, then Hurts becomes a buy low. Because I still feel like one of the things that we underestimate in the NFL is how quickly things change. You know, it doesn't, things don't happen incrementally in the NFL. Things happen like a mousetrap springing, like, you know, like it's it like you just watch that and like Tyrod Taylor is in that injection, you know? So I think Hurts would be the one to buy. And with Wentz, I think what happened is he's just the kind of quarterback that if he doesn't have process and structure around him, he can't be like the cherry on top of the sundae, you know? It's more like spilt milk or something because there's no bowl to hold it, you know? and I just don't know how he genuinely recovers in a situation where he's being forced onto the field in a organization that might not be giving him much better of a situation than they gave him in the year that saw him fall apart.
That's a great point. And I think kind of agree with what you're saying about the whole toxic thing that I think Carson Wentz could possibly be rehabilitated into some semblance of a decent quarterback, but I don't think there's any way it's happening here. And especially it's not happening here with Jalen Hurts backing him up, so to speak, because what he's had to deal with backup quarterbacks in his career, I think that's got to damage his psyche somewhat at this point. So, but I think your take is spot on that. I think they are. I originally, before Peterson got fired, I was sure Wentz was gone, even with the huge cap hit. But once that happened, I was like, they're going to try and keep him here. Yeah. They're probably going to try and keep both of them. And it's just going to be a disaster.
There was such a clean narrative of Wentz going to the Colts, who yeah. A, could afford him, B, Frank had old coaches. Like, it was just perfect, and then this happened and screwed everything.
Then they decided to bring the Colts to him.
Yeah, it was close. Yeah, like, right? If you had that answer on your card, we'd give you partial credit, but not full credit.
Chris's second question is, the best place to order king cake?
Yeah, and Chris, and I love Chris. I hung out with Chris down here in New Orleans before, and his lovely wife. King Cake, just in case people don't know, it's carnival season. Starts on January 6th, goes until Fat Tuesday, and King Cake's the best thing ever. And sometimes when you hear the buzz, and just think about wherever you live. And I want to say, I'm just a New Orleanian for 2 years, but the siren song called me here for like 20 years. New Orleans loves itself some New Orleans, right? Like, I'll take this moment out to say that Leonard Fournette and Tyrann Mathieu are both representing the 7th Ward of New Orleans in the Super Bowl, and that's wonderful. King Cake, it's very important. You can only eat King Cake during carnival season. It's bad luck to eat it outside of carnival season. And wherever y'all are from, there's something, like, I want to hear, this would be a good podcast, right? Like, just invite people on, where are you from, what's the thing I need to eat, or what are the things I need to eat when I come and visit your part of the world, right? Unless it's Cincinnati and Skyline Chili. Sorry. Yeah. anyway, cinnamon and chili. And New Orleans has a list like 75 long, you know. I just went and picked up one of our delicacies, gas station fried chicken. And believe me, I'm not kidding. So King Cake, the best place to get King Cake here is probably, if you do research, the place that you will find. And there are a lot of places where people have childhood memories, like maybe the king cake they had as a kid growing up, like that'd be their favorite king cake. And there's old bakeries that have been around for a long time, like family bakeries. But if you drive out to New Orleans East, which is one of the parts of New Orleans where they really didn't rebuild after Katrina, like you can drive past an old Six Flags out there that the swamp has taken back over.
Wow.
It's wild. There's a Vietnamese bakery called Don Phuong that is just, it's a James Beard Award winner. Which, you know, who cares? But it just give you an idea that the food world knows about this bakery. You drive out past, like, American ruins, basically, and everything they do there is incredible. But they do a king cake there that it's already sold out, like, already for the season. Like, you can't get any more. And it's just amazing. King cake is, like, brioche, usually some cinnamon, some sort of icing. They do an incredible cream cheese icing. And then green and gold and purple sprinkles, the colors of Mardi Gras. And I just, you know, come down during carnival sometime, have some king cake. I'm so glad he asked that question. Obviously, I'm hungry right now.
Man, like a what food to eat in Central Jersey would be the boringest
Jersey
podcast.
Jersey Diner. No, come on, man. I want to give up some love for the Jersey Diner because sometimes at 2 a.m., you need to be somewhere where you can really get anything that you want, you know, anything. So I'm going to give my, like Cheesecake Factory, right? Like, never eat at a place where the menu has a spiral bound, unless it's a Jersey diner, you know? So I've had a lot of good culinary experiences at Jersey on, like, pasta night at some of these places. And I'll say a lot of, pork roll, egg and cheese, you know, mm-hmm. Taylor ham. Jersey's got a lot. Jersey Shore pizza. There's a lot of things going on in Jersey.
I have a wonderful, because Jersey Shore pizza, the thing about it is it's the size of a person.
Right.
I have a wonderful picture of my son when he's like 1.5 and we're holding the pizza up to his face. Right. And it literally is bigger than him. Okay, so fine. I feel a little better about Jersey food, because like at first, the first thing that comes to mind is like grease trucks. Okay, so we thought to take everything fried and put it on a roll. Yeah. That's what we have. Don't get me wrong. I went to Rutgers and I had one literally every day, which, you know, attributes yeah. to the belly that's still going on, even though I haven't been in college in a while. Okay, our next question is Kelly Poor. All right, I always screw up saying this. At KP Poker KP. What is Galladay's value? If I'm looking to move him, should I wait until he signs? Is it smart to gamble, or wait till? Is it smart to gamble on him going to a better situation? This sort of folds into a lot of things we've been talking about this entire time. Like you said before, talent over situation anyway. So if you believe in the player, you go buy. Agree?
Yeah. I don't necessarily agree. Okay. Let's take this step by step. Matthew Stafford is about as good of a quarterback for Kenny Galladay's skill set as he could have, right? Because mm-hmm. Kenny Galladay doesn't create separation. Kenny Galladay is not going to win by running these snappy routes and being wide open. He's going to win by winning in the air. He's going to win by winning at the catch point. And Matthew Stafford, he was weaned on Calvin Johnson, you know? Mm. He knows all about that. What's fascinating here, though, and I've heard Colts fans bring this up, what about the idea of a Stafford-Galladay package? Right? Like wherever Stafford gets traded to, they sign Galladay. So if you anticipate that, that's good for Galladay. And then we start to think about, like, well, where are some of the other places that Galladay could go? I don't know. I mean, you know, Jacksonville, these teams with a lot of money, Jacksonville, Miami comes up. I don't know if that'd be very good, Miami. You know, the Jets come up, obviously. I don't know. Baltimore? I don't know. I don't think Baltimore's going to spend a lot. You know, that would obviously be disastrous, right?
If Des Bryant, why do they need to exactly. Galladay?
Yes. It was nice to see him throw up the X at least one more time, right?
Put Kenny and Stafford on the Colts.
Yeah. That's the thing, right? But I think there's a lot more bad outcomes for Kenny Galladay than good outcomes. Again, the question though is, how much is the market already factoring this in? Is the market already expecting him to take a drop in value? And then if it's already baked in, then you can have a chance to get a win with a Galladay trade. I think his value is most likely topped out, and I would be happy to make some sort of lateral move, knowing that if he goes somewhere with Stafford, I'll wish I had.
Yeah, it's funny. We always make the joke that we have to depend on rational coaching, or in this case, rational GMing.
Right.
We know what Kenny Galladay is. We know what he does.
Right.
You know the kind of quarterback that you need, and you assume these GMs know that as well. Or at least care.
Yeah.
But you know he's going to somehow end up with, it's not going to end up in Dallas because they have too many wide receivers already, but like Dak Prescott mm-hmm. doesn't throw to covered people. Like, he needs people to create their own separation. So you really hope there isn't a team dumb enough to go get, like you said, Miami. Tua doesn't throw to the right. covered guy. So it would be beyond my brain's comprehension for Miami to be like, we got to get this guy. But it'll happen.
Right. Like, bad organizations amplify their badness, and good ones amplify goodness. And another interesting thing too about free agency is, you would think it would be self-regulating, that the team that wants a player the most is going to end up with him. And like you said, you would hope that a team that is carrying a torch for a player has an accurate view of him. And yet we find year after year that that's not always true. So it really does make it like a roulette spin in some ways when, as Chris asked, like, do you jump in before free agency? Because, what's the old, there's the saying about, like, you know, it's the people who have conviction that you should be scared of. It's the people who are pausing, hesitating, you know, see both shades of gray. They're the ones that are seeing it accurately. So that first wave, like you think about the first wave of free agency, how often do those signings work out? How often do we look back and say those were big signings? Because those are often the teams with the most money to spend. And they probably have the most money to spend because they didn't develop players. They didn't sign those players to long-term extensions, right? So they just have all this cap room, and that's not usually where players flourish.
All right, so, but how do, okay, no, I guess we talked enough about that. Let's move on to another fun one. Memphis at DWZ Memphis. If Josh Allen were a sandwich, what kind of sandwich would he be?
And sandwiches are something I'm passionate about. You know? So I really want to, you know, I mean, it's part of me wants to say Josh Allen is one of those sandwiches. See, my brain is coming up with things other than sandwiches, like Nick Tahoe's garbage pile. Is that what it's called in Rochester, where they put like everything on it? You know, just keep going and going and going. But you know, I could say, what is it up in Buffalo? Beef on Weck? Is that it? The bread, the special bread. I don't know what I'm thinking of, guys. Is just one of those sandwiches that if it's made well, it's sublime. But if somebody doesn't know how to make it, it can be just a mess. You know, like a Reuben or something. You know, like if you make it with bad corned beef or something, then it's just not a good sandwich. Even though the combination is sublime when it's done right. Am I making any sense here? You know,
you're making perfect sense, especially because like the first thing that came to my mind was like a sloppy Joe.
Yeah,
because you can actually make a very fancy, very tasty sloppy Joe, and the thing is, it's going to be messy.
Yeah,
it's not always going to work out perfectly. It's going to get on your shirt every once in a while, but when it's done right and it goes well, all of it just comes together perfectly, and you get to the AFC Championship game. And then sometimes it's awful, and he has a 54% completion percentage. That's like the manwich in a can version of Josh Allen. You got anything, Rocky?
That was basically I think we've spoken about this before. I'm horrible with food takes. I have the palate of a 12-year-old. But my most commonly eaten sandwich is probably PB&J. So, but I was basically thinking the same thing. Just sort of like, yeah, just I couldn't think of what kind of sandwich it would be, but just something that you look at it and when you first see it, it doesn't particularly look very appetizing. But you get into it, you bite it, it's delicious. Once you find out more about it. So that was my idea when I saw that question.
All right. Well, we have one last question, and it is from Justin, one of our sometimes co-hosts at Run DFF. Igman had any of the big name QBs that are rumored to be moving this offseason on his fantasy roster? What feasible destination is lowest on his wish list? That's a very longly worded sentence to just say, where don't you want a QB to go?
it's a good question. And what's interesting here is, okay, so I'll toss this out. Denver probably seems a lot better than it actually is because, yeah, they got all the young talent. However, I think the offense is uninspiring, to say the least. You know, Pat Shurmur was a limiting factor for this offense in terms of play calling or setting up his players to succeed. They're an organization that is stuck. So I guess, you know, that's maybe one of the better ways to put it. Chicago. Oh, my God, Chicago. Why wasn't Chicago the first name that popped into my head? Because what you don't want is a quarterback that's going to come into a situation that's going to deteriorate around him. And he may even be the fall guy for it. But other thing with Chicago is they're going to have to sell Allen Robinson. Detroit, I don't think we have to worry about Detroit, though, because Detroit with Anthony Lynn, you know, Detroit's going to probably aim to pass the ball 400 times. So I think let's just stay out of the NFC North, I guess, is probably the best answer.
I'm trying to think. Usually I just stick to poorly run organizations, like right. You brought up Washington before, the Jets. Man, I don't know. Like, it. Do you think they're drafting Fields, or do you think they're going to stick with Darnold?
I mean, hopefully, Douglas.
Do you think they should? Let's throw that out there.
Yeah, I mean, the first answer is Deshaun Watson. But this is where I have to dig in. I've only watched a little bit of Trey Lance so far, in the interest of full disclosure. But I think everyone knows Trevor Lawrence's game, and that's kind of not necessary. And I think that it's difficult to say, honestly, because what do we have? Robert Saleh and Mike LaFleur now. And Mike LaFleur is another Shanahan disciple, which tells me it's going to be a highly structured pass offense, which might be better for Justin Fields, who has some athleticism and is a bit more of a raw product than, say, Zach Wilson. And that's what it's going to come down to, I think. I mean, I don't know. Trey Lance might come up on the outside just because his tools are so tantalizing. But I think that it's – I don't think they know. I don't think the Jets know right now.
And that's a problem.
Well, I think it's just an evaluation process. And I think they also have to know who they are going to be as a team, because that's the other thing is Robert Saleh's coming in and they're starting over. I mean, hopefully every team – I used to want to have this project. See, this is where you get too close to the fire, you know, where I would want to ask every team, ask their position coaches, ask their coordinators, just – how do you win games? How does your team win games? And then see whether the answers are all the same or whether there's some tug of war going on. You know, the organizational clarity isn't there. Because I think that's what Saleh has to establish first. And then it starts to fall into place which quarterback fits your blueprint better of how to win. So, you know, that's, again, why I'd like to dig in and see those quarterbacks, just so I understand the significance of the choice, whether it's Fields or Wilson. And then you start thinking about the choices that teams like Carolina and Detroit are going to have, and so on, Atlanta. So, yeah, the Jets are a team at a major fork in the road. But if they can land Deshaun Watson, then all is forgiven. And Darnold's gone. Number two is gone. Probably a lot more than that is gone. Some of the extra picks they got for Jamal Adams. But we've already seen what Deshaun Watson can cover up in terms of bad coaching, bad organization. I mean, the Texans, now the Jets, sorry, Rocky, because the Eagles are like 31st right now. But, you know, there's an organization now that Jets fans can look at and say, well, at least we're not the Texans. And maybe they'll look a lot more like the Texans, you know, soon if they can get Deshaun Watson.
Man, like, since the last time the Jets had something to really cheer about, it was with a guy named Mark Sanchez.
Yeah.
I feel like just getting Deshaun Watson. I think every Jets fan would go and buy a Deshaun Watson jersey
right.
the second he made it onto the team, just because, like, that's a victory right there, getting a guy like Deshaun Watson. All right, well, that is all of our listener questions. Do you have some time to go through some trades?
Sure.
Or you gotta run?
Let's evaluate a few trades, and then we'll go and say good evening, have a good night until the next time we meet.
Awesome. All right, well, Trade Addicts Leagues, they are 12-team, Superflex, PPR, tight end premium, where tight ends get 1.75 points per reception, and there are 0.05 points for return yardage. Okay. We have 1, 2, 3, 4 trades. Let's start with Trade Addicts 3. We have the 113. It's a 12-team league, but our Toilet Bowl winner gets the 113.
Yes.
It's a compensatory pick. So it's that 113 and Chase Claypool for Zeke Elliott and an early fourth.
Mm. I think this might be a good moment to sell Chase Claypool. It depends on whether you're into delayed gratification or not. Just because I know my Pittsburgh Steelers, this could be a rough stretch. All right. Ben Roethlisberger is going to come back, and his deep ball was, you know, a wounded duck by the end of the year. Or it's probably going to be Mason Rudolph. And this
not going to be Dwayne Haskins.
Well, I hope. I mean. Hey, if we can just keep Dwayne Haskins' dad away from things and get him on the Steelers' way, maybe. I mean, when they signed Haskins, my reaction was somebody, anybody to compete with Mason Rudolph, because they like Mason Rudolph more than they should. Go ahead.
I was just going to make a joke about keeping Haskins out of the strip clubs also. So.
Yeah. Well, at least it's not Atlanta, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, Chase Claypool, I mean, physically, he just was so tremendous, right? So we talked about evaluating rookies. You watch Chase Claypool against the cornerbacks that Notre Dame faced, and he looked the same against NFL cornerbacks in his rookie year. And that was just astounding to me. I didn't love the Chase Claypool pick, to be honest, because I didn't know if he was going to fit as an outside receiver, because he won with his physical advantages. And I'm always wary of college prospects that win on their physical advantages, because those advantages get smaller in the NFL. You have to have skill too. And I don't know that he showed necessarily a ton of skill, but he just showed that he was so dominant. But I don't know also if the Steelers are going to have a quarterback that can really unlock that in the near future, because they're going to be good enough that they're not going to be picking in like the top five. If you go back and look at how they got Ben Roethlisberger, it was an amazing – I remember it so well because it was an amazing set of circumstances where every team in front of them – of course, Manning and Rivers went 1-4, but then, you know, like Houston had Carr – and Atlanta had Vic, and Jacksonville had Leftwich. And it just fell into place so that unless a team moved up for Roethlisberger, and back then, guys, I'm telling war stories, if a quarterback came out as an underclassman, it was bad. It was considered bad because so few of them had done anything. And then on top of that, you had Roethlisberger played at Miami of Ohio, and his one game against a team outside of the MAC in Iowa was his worst game. By far. So there are people saying like, oh, no, 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 this isn't going to work out. Like, this is a sucker bet. So that's the only reason they even had a chance to draft Roethlisberger. And I just don't know if the Steelers are going to improve that much. On the Ezekiel Elliott front, Elliott was a top five running back before Prescott went down. Mm-hmm. He's going to score 20 touchdowns if Prescott is healthy. Maybe he isn't peak Ezekiel Elliott, but he was like 90% of Ezekiel Elliott. He didn't look like he was on a decline or anything like that. Tony Pollard doesn't scare me as much as he did a year ago. So I'm a win now guy. I'm take Elliott's side of that trade.
I'm just going to say I'm so happy to hear Sig say that, especially after the last episode we did and you and Hurley getting on me for my Zeke take as a possible buy low guy. I'm going to say I agree with Sig on the trade. I like this. That's basically Chase Claypool and a 201 yep. for Zeke in a fourth. And I still think that's cheap to buy Zeke because I think exactly what he said. He was scoring 15, 17, 20 points a game when Dak was there the first five games. And I don't think any of us don't expect Dak to be back. So I think that with Dak back, he's going to produce next year. We'll see beyond, you know, he'll be what 27 the next year or something like that. So yeah, but. I love him for next year, and like Sig, I'm always basically a win now guy too. So I would definitely take the Zeke side.
27 straight up ancient, right, guy?
Yeah.
Todd Gurley's 26.
Hence, he needs the walker. He's there already.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, Dak isn't necessarily signed. do we think with a large amount of certainty he is going to stay in Dallas?
99.5%. I mean, I just think that as much as they could have saved themselves money, Jerry Jones, really, who we're talking about here, that, mm-hmm. I mean, the only reason you let Dak go is if you can trade for Aaron Rodgers or something like that. And then Aaron Rodgers is back with Mike McCarthy. And depending on how you feel about Aaron Rodgers, you either laugh or cry.
That's what I was going to say. I don't think Jerry's going to, if he does let Dak get away because of the money, I still don't think he's going to go with like Andy Dalton next year. He'll get Stafford or Rodgers or somebody else to take Dak's place, I think. So I still think Zeke will have much more competent quarterback play in 2021.
The Andy Dalton hate. It's always there, fellas. It's always there. All right. Our next trade is Trade Addicts 4. It is Robert Woods and a 22 third for Leonard Fournette and a 22 second.
You know, I just give a shout out for Leonard Fournette for the seventh ward here in New Orleans. So it might be surprising to hear me say that. And he's played well. I mean, Bruce Arians has managed him well to say, hey, you're not going to be the guy, but we're going to need you. And he looks great. He's fresh. He looks like Leonard Fournette close to his peak with the Jags. In NFL terms, he's a replaceable asset.
Mm-hmm.
And in this running back market, you know, he's not going to get interest over Aaron Jones or Chris Carson. He's probably more at the level of James Conner. He's probably going to get similar to what he got this year, like 1 year, $2 or $3 million deal to be part of a committee. So I just don't see Fournette as an asset that I care about. So basically, in this trade, you know, you're basically for the bump from the second to the third, you're getting Robert Woods, which sounds good to me because Robert Woods is good. And even though he's not necessarily a difference maker, and I don't know how many flex, you said it's, I mean, I'm assuming from everything you described, it's a deep league in the sense that you know, you're not just starting two wide receivers and two running backs or something like that. There's multiple flex spots, not just the super flex spot.
Yeah, it's one of every position, a super flex and five flexes.
Exactly.
Yeah, start 10 total.
Right. So if there's 10 off, I mean, so now this is a league where depth on your roster is important. So having a Robert Woods to plug in there every week is more valuable than, say, a typical league where you may start, you know, two running backs, three wide receivers, and one flex. So I love it. I think that this is one where get what you can from Fournette now.
Just wait until the Seahawks give Leonard Fournette a four-year, $50 million contract.
Yeah.
I am a very pessimistic Seahawks fan. Like, I was waiting for them to draft Jay Dillon in the first this past draft. No, but I agree. To me, this is just taking Robert Woods for a 22-second, and Fournette, you hope maybe he'll fill in at the end of the season for an injury. Maybe.
Yeah, and I'm with both of you.
All right, this next one is also Trade Addicts 4. It is Brandon Ayuk for Odell Beckham and Antonio Brown. So this begs the question, is Odell kind of gone as a fantasy asset?
Not gone. I don't think he's gone. And in fact, we didn't get to hang out for the good part with Odell, right? I mean, maybe some of it's because Odell got hurt. So, you know, I'm the mayor of Narrative Street, so let's take a walk down Narrative Street together, right? Mm-hmm. Because Baker Mayfield started really clicking with this pass offense after Odell Beckham got hurt. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we just watched Aaron Rodgers. I mean, can we say that maybe Aaron Rodgers relied a little too much on Davante Adams in the red zone? And if he had anticipated that all eyes would be on Davante Adams, and you wouldn't have these play calls, and some of this is on Hackett and LaFleur, where you have these play calls where it's like a one-route play call, and the one route's Davante Adams, well, if it doesn't work, what do? Right? This is why they sputtered in the red zone where they were so good. And I suppose it's believable to say that Odell Beckham has such a heavy gravitational pull that when he was out there, Baker Mayfield couldn't just let the game come to him, run the plays as they're meant to be run, go through the progressions mm-hmm. in a deliberate way. But I don't think that's necessarily what happened. I think that he just got accustomed to the offense. You know, there just wasn't a long offseason. There wasn't a big install time. And as the season went on, it all started to click. It all started to – it jumped out at him how these plays were supposed to work. And he understood, and it worked. What's beautiful about the idea of Odell Beckham in Cleveland, and we saw it a few times before he got hurt, is you have Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt, and you have to stop the run first, or you have to at least, you know, have your run fits, and that's job one. And then you have the flow so that you can take your deep play action shots. And we were watching, who was it he was against? William Jackson, I think, early on in the year, where he absolutely roasted him for one long touchdown. And then if Jackson hadn't held his jersey, I know Packers fans don't want to hear anything about held jerseys right now, he would have had two. So it's not that difficult for me to picture Odell Beckham in this offense now. Just putting together like four for 115, two touchdown games, maybe three or four times in a season. And you, I mean, that's the difference between like wide receiver 3 and wide receiver 23, you know? So I still think Beckham is in a place that he can flourish. The only real question to me is, are the injuries mounting to the point where he just isn't the guy that he was before physically, which is certainly possible. I like Brandon Ayuk. I think what we see again is trust the 49ers, right? Trust Shanahan. If he zeroes in on somebody and he says, that's my guy, then chances are he knows exactly how to use him. Because if you watch the San Francisco offense, you know, Ayuk and Samuel, again, I'm going to mention Matt Waldman a third time. You know, he's just a glorified running back, so he's not even really winning with route running. Ayuk was, I think, more advanced as a route runner than we expected, but he's getting open more as a you know, residue of the play caller, the scheme. And Ayuk was a top five fantasy wide receiver for a stretch this year. Now, it was when Samuel was out. Mm-hmm. Who's going to be quarterback for San Francisco? Right? I don't know. It's still going to be a run-first offense. I, as much as I like what Brandon Ayuk did this year, I think this is a sign that the value, and I don't even care about Antonio Brown. As a Steelers fan, I'm contractually obligated to say I don't even care about Antonio Brown. But he didn't look like the Antonio Brown of old with the Bucks. No. I mean, he looked like a player in the autumn of his career. So I look at this as to say, hey, kids, go out and make offers to the Odell Beckham team and see just how cheap you can get him. And I would take him for Ayuk.
Okay. What do you think Ayuk's value is? Like, what do you think is a good offer to go send for Odell Beckham right now, if we're talking draft pick wise?
Yeah. Well, I mean,
you don't have to send a first, do you?
To get Beckham?
Well, we play super flex. Let's just most of our
teams right. So, and with this quarterback class, yeah, it's going to be deep. Yeah, it's going to be deep. So, yeah, I mean, maybe a late first. So, yeah, and you're right. By the way, I think I had fixed Juju's value 1.415 with super flex, maybe more like 1.7 or 1.8.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I would think so. Let's look at Ayuk as a yardstick, right? Because if we redraft the 2020 rookie wide receivers, you know, Jefferson obviously is number one. I think Lamb is still number two.
Yeah.
Ayuk maybe slots in there at number three, right? T. Higgins has an argument for three also.
I mean, I was going to say, I always say I'm hashtag Team Clemson big wide receiver.
Sure. So, well, you know.
T. Higgins, DeAndre Hopkins, Mike Williams. I'm telling you, he's going to be a thing sooner.
Oh, yeah. No, he is. He's with Justin Herbert. That's all you need to know, right? Although Joe Lombardi doesn't exactly strike me as like someone that's going to stretch the field. Whatever. That's a whole other. There's a whole, we could do like a 12-1-hour show series just on coaching changes where we just speculate. Like, we don't even really know. Let's just speculate. I like to speculate.
Same time next week?
Yeah, absolutely.
Sounds good.
This is great, guys. And then running back wise, you know, Jonathan Taylor's, everyone who has him is happy with him. Like you said, Edwards-Helaire, maybe not as much. Dobbins, everyone who got him is happy with him. Akers, it took a while. Everyone who got him is happy with him. You know, DeAndre Swift, he's going to get like 400 carries next year. So you could say that Ayuk is going to be, you know, and if you add in Superflex based on the quarterbacks last year, Burrow, Tua, Herbert, now where are we at? End of the first round. Even though this shows you how good the 2020 rookie class was for fantasy. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I guess we are looking at like a late first, early second. And I just think that, I mean, maybe there comes a time that Ayuk is a guy that really tilts matchups in fantasy. And he was for a few weeks, but everything was lined up for him to do that. But I don't think it's going to be high volume pass offense ever. I don't know how his outlook looks if Debo Samuel's healthy all year and George Kittle's healthy all year. Let's remember that too.
Oh, yeah.
So I think this is a short term, at least, buy low on Beckham, sell high on Ayuk. And I guess we really have two sides of this, guys. One is Ayuk might be a guy that you can bring a little more value out than he actually has. And Beckham is a guy that, you know, again, I just think that we haven't seen what he can do with Baker Mayfield comfortable in this offense. Remember, Rashard Higgins is going to be a free agent. You know, Jarvis Landry's not running those deep routes. So, yeah, I'm excited to get Beckham if this is the price.
I like it. All right, we'll squeeze one last trade in, and then we will let you run off into the wild green yonder.
Yes.
Trade Addicts 8. This is Clyde Edwards-Helaire for Amari Cooper and a 22 second.
Man. Edwards-Helaire is a great player. I haven't come up with a good name for players like this, guys. It's just kind of like take-a-stand players. And the idea is this. No matter what, the value is going to be a lot higher or a lot lower than it is right now. You know? Like, we're going to look back and we're going to say, right when the season was over was exactly the right time to trade Clyde Edwards-Helaire, or right when the season over was exactly the right time to trade for Clyde Edwards-Helaire. And I really liked him coming out of LSU. I liked that Kansas City had clarity. I liked, obviously, the role in the offense that he was set up in. But maybe we underestimated Damian Williams. Maybe we didn't understand that Damian Williams was playing really well, you know, because of his pedigree, because of what he had done before he went to Kansas City, because Edwards-Helaire wasn't making those kinds of plays in the passing game. And even now, I think you're going to see in the Super Bowl, and I know some of it Edwards-Helaire's hurt, that Darrell Williams is the preferred option.
Yeah, he was this past game, and he looked good. I mean, towards the end of the game, it was a little, you know, got a little more, they cared more about being chippy than they cared about actually playing well. But he started to look really good towards the end of the game.
He did. And look, Darrell Williams is going to play the full running back role, blocking, receiving, running. And he's going to play good assignment football. And that's all they need with everything else they have in that offense. Mm-hmm. I love Clyde Edwards-Helaire as a player, at least in the fit. But, you know, I also love Nyheim Hines. And I know Nyheim Hines is worth a lot less in Dynasty than I would value him because I love him. So Amari Cooper is still one of those guys you can set your watch by. And if Dak Prescott hadn't gotten hurt, we would have, I'm almost certain we would have had 3 1,000-yard receivers. Mm-hmm. And what that creates for Cooper, Cooper's the downfield guy, those big plays downfield. And I just think that, again, it's kind of like Beckham in Cleveland, but it's even more exciting. Like, we don't even know what Amari Cooper could do over a whole season with Dak Prescott. So I think this is a – if you want to get out of Clyde Edwards-Helaire, if you can get Amari Cooper in a second for him right now, you should be encouraged to do that.
So what I'm hearing is that Sigmund Bloom just told me I made a good trade, trading away Clyde Edwards-Helaire and getting Amari Cooper in a second. That's what I heard, and that's what I'm going to take away.
You're not scared, right? I mean, even if Edwards-Helaire becomes like the next thing, you got a thing in Cooper, yeah. And you got a good dart as a second-round pick.
Yeah, exactly, and that's what it comes down to. I have a dislike for running backs in general as fantasy assets.
Well, let me tell you, let me interject. I won a championship this year. Some of it was because I needed 39 points from Stephon Diggs on Monday night, week 16.
He swung so many championships.
Oh, man. It was really like a Christmas miracle. It really was. I've never had something like that happen. And my wife, the love of my life, bless her heart, we're watching the game. And I mean, I think like a quarter and a half into that game, Diggs had like 2 catches for 6 yards or something, you know?
Yeah.
And I was almost like, let's just turn off the game. I mean, what's the point? It's not even going to be a good game, you know? And she said, no, you know, come on, believe, have some faith. And when he caught the third touchdown, and in hindsight, like he had to catch that touchdown because they were going to rest the starters at the end of that drive. That's it. You know, the fantasy production was over. She said, and I'm 45 years old, let me say, she says the fastest she's ever seen me move. I sprung out of bed. Like, I can't believe it. I can't believe it. I got like a foot from the TV to watch the replay. Be like, oh my God, did this actually happen? My running backs all season in that league were Kareem Hunt, Devin Singletary, and J.D. McKissick.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, I was on the other side of that Diggs thing on this very podcast. I think we were recording, and I was up 19 with Beasley and Moss to his Diggs, and I lost. Yeah. I was not a happy camper.
And I lost by 0.3 because they benched Josh Allen.
Yeah. He was, you were down like 40 going into the game or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. And fantasy football is so ridiculous. Yeah. Why do we care so much about it?
I know.
It's so stupid.
So, I mean, I accepted the loss. So I really, like, it didn't really hurt me that much. But the fact that they gave me, like,
let that
hope. And it was against, you know, my old co-host at the time. Oh. So there was a little bit more going into it. Yeah. But it was, 0.3, the worst. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you again, Sigmund, for coming on. This has been so awesome. Like I said in the tweet, what do you want Sigmund to talk about? Because Rocky and I are just going to sit here listening.
Yeah. Yep.
Y'all are too kind.
Yeah, I'm going to just like, all I have to say in my head is thank you, thank you, thank you. So I got it out 3 or 4 times there. So that's good enough. But again, before you leave, remind everyone who you are, what you do, where they can find what you do.
Yeah. Yeah. Football guys at Sigmund Bloom and, you know, DLF, the whole Dynasty community, all the Dynasty podcasts. I did Dynasty Game Night with, my man, Matt, the zookeeper, who I actually went out to visit at the zoo. That was fantastic. That was like an all-time thrill. Speaking of like my thank you, thank you, thank you moments, you know, the whole family, I think it's tremendous that we have created, I've said this a lot in the last year, we have created one of the few truly positive, uplifting places on the internet, right?
Yep.
We're supportive of each other. We help each other grow. We want to promote each other. We want everybody to be successful. And I think with the sports gambling money that's going to come into our, some of it's going to overflow into our little world, the table just gets bigger and bigger. So it doesn't have to be about competition. It can just be about enjoying each other, enjoying that we all inhabit this world together. And I always enjoy any time I get to be out with people like yourselves and your great listeners. And I hope we can all continue to revel in something that no matter what else is going outside of this, you know, once we hit live and we're doing our thing, it's our safe place, right? it's our place that we can enjoy what we have. And I'm just thankful to be part of it and thankful that, you know, y'all make me feel important. Because I'm not really that important. I podcast because I'm lonely. I just want to say, can anybody hear me? And if somebody says, I heard you, then that's fulfilling for me.
Wow, that just spoke to my soul, that last little line.
That was great.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Really, I appreciate it.
All right, go enjoy some king cake.
Indeed.
Well, that was freaking awesome. Thank you for setting that up, Rocky.
No problem. Yeah, no, I do feel like a lot of times I was just kind of sitting there. Yeah. Like, I'm just listening at the foot of the masters.
I was so
I felt like thankful. I didn't talk enough, but I wanted to let him talk.
I'm so thankful for that he leaned into his mic to talk and then leaned back when he was done, because otherwise I was just staring.
Yeah.
Listening to him. I would not have caught the verbal cue that he was done talking. Okay, well, I mean, we've only been going for like 1 hour and 3 minutes, and come hell or high water, we're recording for an hour and a half, right?
No matter what.
Right, but we do have some news that I do want to talk about a little bit. We need to talk about the fact that Philip Rivers retired and screwed over a lot of probably both of our fantasy football teams.
Yeah, especially mine.
Yeah, I had a lot of Philip Rivers. I won a couple of championships and got a lot of second places with Philip Rivers. But that did open up the Colts. Everyone's going to go to the Colts because they have money. Yes. And they have an open quarterback spot. It seems like Deshaun Watson is not. I never even dreamed of that Stafford Galladay going into the Colts. Like, oh my, like he said that out loud. And I'm just like, oh my God, that would be freaking great.
I would love that. But yeah, Philip Rivers retiring is going to screw a lot of my super flex teams. So I'll just have to find that next guy nobody wants and trade for him. I'm not sure who that is yet. I
was going to ask if you had an idea who that was, because it feels like that guard is gone. Drew Brees, he has a deal to go in a booth already. I feel like he's done.
Yeah.
Roethlisberger, I feel like his arm can't make it through a season.
Throwing very deeply, you can't, but
he will finish. Oh man, that dude will finish the season no matter what.
Yeah,
like he'll start throwing left-handed if he has to. That's just the kind of player he is. But
With what they were doing this year, though, I mean, he was still, I think, quarterback 12, something like that. So,
okay,
yeah, I'm not sure what the exact number is, but it was right in that. If it's not low end QB1, it's high end QB2. I had him on quite a few teams as well. And He might be a little better than you thought he was, but I think that's definitely what we're going to see. I mean, he's got no hope to be anything more than, say, QB 12, 13, 14, but that's the kind of guy I'll often go for. But I think that we were kind of talking about this some in the Cool Kids Club today. I just think there's like Sig said, the Schefter put out that 18 possible quarterback open spots or something that Schefter said, but there, I don't think it's that many either, but it's a lot. And I think we're going to need some clarity on who's starting where before I can determine really the kind of guys I'd be targeting. So I don't necessarily think it's going to be the old guys. I mentioned in the Cool Kids Club, Tua is basically almost a QB2 at this point. That might be a guy I'm targeting. Cause I always say it's not about waiting. It's not about waiting till round 7 to draft a quarterback. I'm waiting till round we get to the QB2s area. That's when I start drafting quarterbacks. So if he's falling there, that's what I always say. You can sometimes get young guys in that area if there's uncertainty around them. It's not just about drafting Roethlisberger and Rivers and Matt Ryan and all that. So
I was going to say, in startups, you're going to end up with a lot of Matt Ryan and Daniel Jones, it sounds like.
Yeah, probably more Jones than Ryan, because at least Jones has the rushing upside. So, and nobody likes Daniel Jones either. So,
right, I have a lot. It's funny. Like Deshaun Watson has always been one of my favorite quarterbacks since he came into the league. But before last season and a little the season before that, his value just got so high, and I hate holding onto high valued quarterbacks that I always downgrade. I ended up with so much Daniel Jones and Josh Allen, and one of those worked out wonderfully.
Yeah, I don't think we're ever going to get a Josh Allen season from Daniel Jones, but I think we could definitely get that again low end QB1 area. Which as long as if I can get that from a guy where I generally draft him, I'm usually pretty happy with that.
Yeah,
and I make up for it in other places.
Yeah, that's the big thing that like I said in the Cool Kids Club. Oh, hey, Patreon.com/TradeAddictsPod. You can be part of the Cool Kids Club. Jump into that GroupMe chat and find out why we are going so hard about this, the 101 versus everything and aging running backs and aging quarterbacks. Like there was, oh man, that freaking chat that spilled into Twitter, that spilled into other chats about
Ugh. It was a lot of fun. I mean, I did not get a lot of work done today because there was a lot of that.
Yeah,
going
on. Yeah.
Oh man, I made what's it called? Twitter polls, and I forgot to go to pull up their totals. But while we're doing that, we already talked about Deshaun Watson wanting to go to the Jets, which would might be cool, might be terrible. I guess that's neither here nor there at the moment. Okay, nope, I did not bookmark them. Man, I did preparedness. F minus. Here we go.
Wonder if you ever been prepared for a podcast.
Yeah, I know. It's part of my charm. That's what I keep telling myself.
Yep.
So I put out in Superflex, 12-team Superflex PPR, the 101 versus what not necessarily consensus, but three of the top running backs. The first one was Alvin Kamara, and this is what sparked the conversation. It ended 50-50, Alvin Kamara in the 101, which –
Yeah, I struggle on that one. I but it's funny because you even said that you think he should be in the chat that he should be worth more than the 101. But you know, I did you say you would not pay the 101?
I don't pay for running back, so no, I would not pay the 101.
Yeah, and I sometimes will, but we know I'm not a quarterback guy, as we just talked about. But Kamara to me too is kind of more shaky to me than a lot of other guys. He's also in theory at peak value at 25 as the no doubt about it RB1, and just not knowing so much could change with his situation next year as opposed to some of the other top running backs, which that makes me more iffy on him than some of the other guys. So I might actually lean the 101 there just because, you know, Breeze is gone. Is it going to be Taysom Hill? What does Taysom Hill mean for Kamara after what we saw this year when Breeze was out? So I think on that one, I think the poll is right. It's 50-50 for me. On one day, tomorrow I might say Kamara, but I think right now I'm actually leaning 101, even though
I'm not going to get
he should be worth more.
I'm not going to get into the whole thing with the Saints, but what I will say is, remember when Lamar Jackson came in for Joe Flacco? It was kind of iffy. It wasn't fun. It wasn't dynamic. It was just, all right, okay. Because the offense wasn't suited for him. It wasn't built. It wasn't ready for it. They weren't ready for Taysom Hill to be a thing yet. They were still running Drew Brees' offense. Giving an offseason with Taysom Hill, assuming this is their game plan, an offseason with Taysom Hill being the starter, building a game plan around him, it's not going to look like what it looked like for those few weeks. I am less worried about that than with Kamara than everyone seems to be.
That's true. And historically, from what we've seen, that the running quarterbacks are good for the running game, but they also, a lot of those guys tend to not dump off to the running backs. So I'm interested to see how that plays out. Cause I mean, that's Kamara's game. Despite his 6 rushing touchdowns earlier this year, is generally not running the ball. So not that he's bad at it, but he, the reason he's a, you know, fantasy god is the pass catching. And I just worry if they actually, and I still have doubts that they could actually put Taysom Hill out there for 16 games. Sean Payton, you know, he thinks he's the smartest guy in the world. So I wouldn't be shocked either if they do it. So there's just all that uncertainty just scares me with Kamara.
They're just going to put like electrodes on Taysom Hill's nipples. And every time he looks Kamara's way, but decides to run it, they shock him.
There you go. That'll work.
Okay, so the next poll, that's the word I put up, was Saquon Barkley or the 101. How do you think that finished?
I think people still rate Saquon higher than Kamara, so I'll say still close, but 55-45 Saquon?
54-46 Saquon.
Yeah.
And I pretty much 50-50 at that point.
Yeah, I would go Saquon. Even with the injury, I just have more faith in Saquon going forward than I do Kamara, I guess.
Well, here's my thing about Saquon. He got hurt in the beginning of the season, which is, if you're going to get hurt, that's when you want it to happen. So he's going to be healthy by the start of the training camps and the workouts. So he'll have time to start trusting his legs a little bit. And also, that offensive line made Wayne Gallman look good at the end of the year.
Yes.
Let's face it, Wayne Gallman isn't good. So the fact that he looked pretty good should really make you feel better about what you saw those first game, that first game and a half when Saquon.
And that was such a pet peeve of mine, by the way, is that what people would use that game and a half where he played the Steelers and had a horrible game where he was getting swarmed constantly and still had like 12 points in that game because of the passing usage. And then the second game, he only had like 4 carries, and people wanted to say that the offensive line is so bad, Saquon's going to be horrible next year because of that. And look at him the first game and a half. Like, he had one game against a great front seven, and people are trying to use that to extrapolate that his value should be going down.
And David Gettleman is literally the opposite of rational GMing. But you hope they draft a wide receiver with some decent draft capital. We said that last year, but yeah, that didn't seem to happen. But so this year, fingers freaking crossed, man. Like, they have to put someone good across from Darius Slayton.
Right. Or at the very least, get one of those free agents that are out there.
Yeah, true. Just bring someone in, because yeah, I have absolutely no idea what their cap is like, so I don't know if they can bring free agents. But, like, they have to do something. But again, David Gettleman. I mean, that's yeah, that's the unfortunate
what
answer.
You said is so true. We assume rational coaching and GMing, and so much of the time it's not what we get.
Nope. All right, so the last one that I ran was Christian McCaffrey or the 101. How do you feel? How do you think that one ended?
I think he's still rated higher than both of those two. So I think it has to be more than 54-46, 63-37. 76-24. Wow. I think it should be. I think it should be.
It was like 82-18 for the first like 100 or so votes. Like, it was really out there. And I guess why? Like, to me, Saquon and CMC were right next to each other for so much. And I get that. To me, I'm more worried when a guy misses games for multiple reasons. Like, that's he came true. Back and went out again. Like, we knew Saquon wasn't going to play. We knew he got hurt. We know what's wrong with him. CMC had like 3 different injuries.
I think it's a couple of things. I think it's
I know they just shut him down. That's really
that,
what
that
it
was
comes
one
down
of the things I was going to say. That
the Panthers have just been like, dude, just we know you're good. You don't have to prove it to us. You got your money. Let's just next year, pal.
Right. That was one of them. Was that I think a lot of people feel that he was just shut down at the end of the year, so they're not as worried about that. And I think it's also going back to 2019. He was so far and above and away of everyone else. And in the 3 games he played this year, he was basically that guy again. I think he had like 25-plus points in the 3 full games that he played.
That one game he came back at like week 9, he was like 36.
Yeah. So that was the first couple of the beginning of the year before he got all the injuries. So he was like that. So I think people, again, Saquon's been very good when healthy, but we've still never seen Saquon do what Christian McCaffrey did in 2019. And then, like I said, in the 3 games we saw him this year, he basically did the same thing. So I think that's why people are still putting him up there where they're not putting Saquon quite as high.
And I saw Daniel Jeremiah put out a mock draft for the NFL draft, which had Justin Fields falling to the Panthers at, I think, their 8.
Yeah, and he also, I think, had Kyle Pitts going to the 49ers.
Yeah.
Which I thought was ridiculous.
Because Kyle Shanahan doesn't see positions. He sees
yes,
pass catchers. I sent a screenshot of that to my friend, and he was at work. I'm in my house. So he still lives around me, but he was like a good like 20 miles away. I think I heard him slapping his forehead when I sent him that picture.
And how pissed off would Dynasty Twitter be if Kyle Pitts ended up a 49?
Oh my God. Like, don't get me wrong. If there's one of the dudes I would trust to still make them both work, it would be Kyle Shanahan. But I don't want to have to. No, I don't want to have to depend on that. How do you feel about the Chargers offensive coordinator, Shane Steichen, now being the OC in Philly?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know much about him other than that he guided the best rookie quarterback season ever, so that seems pretty good. I don't have strong feelings about it either way. They went kind of no name with both their offensive and defensive coordinators and their head coach. I guess we'll see. I just, I guess, cautiously optimistic.
I'll take it.
I mean, they definitely, I mean, like I said, he did what he did with Herbert. No one expected that out of Herbert. So hopefully he's maybe a quarterback whisperer, can help one or both of the guys there. I mean, they definitely need something to go on with those quarterbacks. So I'm hopeful, but I don't know much more about him other than you did mispronouncing his name or maybe pronouncing it right. I don't know.
I mean, hopefully one of the two of those were correct.
Yeah. The only thing I can think was that he used running backs well enough that it kind of makes me feel good for Miles Sanders. When Eckler was healthy, he saw enough workload and the right kind of workload that we should see Miles Sanders get. And I don't know if the dump offs were Herbert or if they were designed. Either way, Eckler, what was that? His first game back, he got like 14 targets or something crazy like that. So I think I'm going Miles Sanders shopping. I went Alvin Kamara shopping this morning and it didn't really seem to work out too well. I think you have an offer.
I might still have one. Yeah. I don't think the Doug Peterson firing and the new offensive coordinator changes Miles Sanders' outlook all that much one way or the other. All the worries everyone had, and I even let it get to me a little bit too about Peterson rotating, never really happened. I mean, Miles Sanders didn't get 20, 25 carries a game, but nobody does. And a lot of that was just a function of their offense not being very good. So, and his injuries. So, I don't think we're going to, like you said, I think you'll see a similar workload to last year, which was fine. They just were in a lot of negative game scripts.
Antonio in the chat is asking if you think Miles Sanders can be an RB1 this year.
RB1. Low end, but just because I mean, after the top four or five guys, there's a whole big group of guys there that could be anywhere. Like Zeke, we're talking about, Swift, Gibson, Sanders, even Eckler. I mean, there's just so many guys. I think it was on the timeline recently. They were doing your and Brian's favorite game, the ADP thing. And, They went from like 6 to 18 on guys they would possibly, I think they're comparing James Robinson to, and they were saying you could basically slot him in anywhere in there because it was a whole big group of guys that were all have, you know, similar ceilings and floors and stuff. So I think there's tons of guys who could be an RB1. Do I think he will be? Probably not unless he gets a ton of passing game work. And I don't think he'll be a 50 reception guy. Just because I think they are going to be horrible again next year, and that doesn't lend itself to a great running back. So I would say low-end RB1 is probably his ceiling for 21. Probably falls in that high-end 2 range just because of the talent, and he does have some pass-catching chops.
Yeah, James Robinson, by the way, is another guy I would love if I believed the Jaguars had a rational GMing going on. I don't even know who the GM is anymore, but I still just don't trust the Jaguars to not draft a running back in the second round.
Yeah, I think they got Trent Baalke now, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I don't even know.
Yeah, anymore. But I've kind of been going under, maybe I shouldn't be going the assumption of rational GMing. I've been saying it for a while now. I can't see them investing serious capital on a running back. So
they shouldn't. That's the phrase I've been using. They shouldn't. That doesn't mean they won't.
That's true.
Okay, so we talked about Stafford. So the last thing I have on my list is Aaron Rodgers said that his future is uncertain. Do you think he should leave? And what do you think his dynasty value is now? Or can it get better if he leaves?
I don't think it's going to make much of a difference where he is. Unless he just goes to someplace. But I don't think he's going to go to someplace ridiculously bad. Because if he leaves, it's because he wants to leave. They have him under control for, I think, 3 more years under contract. So the only way he's going somewhere is if he forces his way out. And I don't think he's going to like accept a trade to the Jets or something. So I think wherever he ends up is going to be a decent situation no matter what, if he were to leave. So I don't think it changes his value really much either way. The fact that he's a year older might affect some people. So maybe slightly negative, but I don't think it's going up anywhere. I'm trying to think if there's anywhere I could think of that he would go to that would go up. I don't think so. I mean, he's got things are pretty good as is. He had just came off a 48 whatever it was touchdown season in Green Bay. So I don't see it going up, but I also don't think it goes down. And should he leave? Maybe after that field goal call. Oh my God. that was the most, I'm like, what the hell are they doing? I don't think he should leave. I guess, what is his, is it just that he's sick of not winning there, or
they have just thrown his amazing career away, it feels.
Yeah. And LaFleur has gotten to 2 championship games, but I couldn't get over the hump. So
yeah, there was, what did, was it you that posted the picture of Rex Grossman? And
no, I saw it though. No, it wasn't. It, yeah. Two one-time NFC champions, just won 2 1-half-time NFC champions. Yeah. I mean, I guess I could see him wanting to leave, but I don't think he should leave. He's, I think he's got it as good as he's going to have it there. And like I said, I mean, they have made it to 2 straight championship games. So, I mean,
that's in spite of their irrational GMing.
So. Yes. Then that's maybe they actually draft a wide receiver this year and it gets even better.
Oh, I skipped over one. Did Aaron Jones kill his dynasty value in this NFC championship game?
I saw that. Did you mean by his play or the injury or?
Yeah. Well, by the fumbles.
I don't think so. I mean, I think his value, dynasty value is kind of killed anyway because of, I don't think it most, like Sig alluded to, I don't think I know anyone really expects them to re-sign him, and no one knows what's going to happen. And he's a 25-year-old running back going into a second contract on possibly a new team. So I don't think his value, he's probably a guy whose production could exceed whatever his value is going to be. But I don't think he's valued very highly at this point anyway. Do you?
No, and I've learned that because I took him in a dispersal and then realized now that I can't really move him because, I mean, they talked about it. Scott in the group talked about dispersals for a decent amount last time, but I still want to talk about it because I like talking about things. But just to say real quick, my strategy in a dispersal is always you're not really – you most of the time you're not going to be able to compete with what you're going to get out of that dispersal. So you pick what's the most value. And what you'll be able to move. And I really, to me, like Aaron Jones, I was hoping was going to land in one of those good spots. You know, he'll get paid that top 6 running back money. He'll go, he'll be the guy because they're paying him to be the guy. And then he fumbles twice and gets hurt in the NFC championship game. And I think that destroyed his value until he gets signed somewhere. There's no hype left. That's what I'm saying.
Antonio says Buffalo in here. I'm assuming that was in reference to Aaron Jones. Does that pump him up at all, you think?
I don't know, man. Like, they didn't use Singletary or Moss. Is it because they're bad or because they don't use running backs?
Yeah. There's always the Josh Allen taking away touchdown narrative as well. So.
Yeah, but he's a Cam Newton-style runner. Sooner or later, they can't run as much anymore.
Yeah.
And Josh Allen is crazy young, but.
And I agree on your dispersal strategy. That's basically what we had one in one of the Trade Addicts leagues I got into after becoming host. And that's basically what I tried to do. And it's funny, ever since we've been trying to trade each other guys back and forth and can't agree on anything. Yeah. in that league, I forget, was that TAE 7? I can't remember. 8? I can't remember which one it was. But
that was 1.
That was 1. Okay. Yeah, so I know. I wanted to see
between 2 playoff teams.
Yeah.
So we both have good players and we just kind of, we sniped each other a few times and we're trying to get the players we wanted back. And now we just can't fall on the right.
We can't agree. Yeah.
Okay. Well, we have been recording for over an hour and a half, which means I feel better about everything. And while it is only 9 o'clock as opposed to the 11 something it would normally be, I'm still ready to go the hell to bed. So it doesn't matter. So we are going to end this. I already talked about patreon.com/tradeaddictspod. Go sign up, get all this awesome stuff, and you know, you get me and Rocky. That's awesome. That's all the awesome you need.
Exactly. Right? Oh, definitely.
And then you got ffpodshirts.storeenvy.com, where you can get awesome shirts, mugs, stickers from a ton of your favorite podcasts. There's all of the DAP Network shows, us, Timeline. I haven't taken down the junkie stuff. I'm probably never going to. Get Real with Casey Kasem. There's also Dynasty Diagnostic, Dynasty Game Night, Superflex Super Show, Devi Marketplace. There's Dynasty Vipers and FF Intervention we just put up. And the cool thing about getting all of that awesome stuff is every single penny that comes in goes to charity. And for till the end of February, Rocky, why don't you tell us about the charity after you take your swig of Yuengling?
It's the Asperger's Autism Network. We talked about it last time. Just they provide all sorts of resources for people with children on the spectrum, and also help, you know, people like get information, advocates, things like that, connect with other people. So that's the charity I choose for, I guess, through the end of February.
Yep. And since I have been far too lazy to get my kids in front of a microphone to record a new ending, I'm going to say you could follow me at Dynasty Outhouse, follow Rocky at Dynasty FF Addict, follow the show at Trade Addicts Pod. Also, follow, rate, review, subscribe, all of that fun stuff to the DAP Network, Dynasty Addicts Podcast Network. The Twitter is at DAP_network. You can get the awesome shows we just talked about. There's also the DLF family of podcasts where you can get the DLF flagship show, Dynasty Game Night, us, Read and React, the IDP show, Devi, like I always say, Destination Devi, that's the right show. Four Corners, Dynasty Builders, which I yelled at them for being funny because that's my shtick. And you should go listen to them. They're pretty awesome. And I am, Dynasty Crossroads, if he still calls it that after, you know, Peter keeps that dude. Anytime I say hi to him, he's like, yes, boss. Sorry, boss. And it makes me feel bad about myself. Thanks, Peter. But on that note, thanks for listening. We will catch you next week. I don't care that's 9 o'clock. Good night, Rocky.
Good night, Russ.